Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up for everyone to download and listen to and hopefully enjoy. Joining me today is Juliana. Say hello, Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And do we have any news before we get into this episode? We normally talk a bit about I've been on a work trip and then did some family visit back to the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
That's it.
Nothing else. No, I don't think anything.
You had a birthday.
Oh, yeah, it was my birthday. But that's it.
Happy birthday, Juliana.
Thank you.
She's the big 3'9".
Yeah.
which is creeping up to 40.
Yeah. Met some old people from the past and they looked at me like, "What? You're 39? I can't believe that either."
But you've not changed at all, is what everyone said.
Yes, that is what everyone said.
Anyway, the last episode, let's move on to the podcast. Oh, this episode. The last episode that we did was called but it was a book called I Who Have Never Known Men by Jacqueline Hartman.
Yes.
And I spent an Audible credit on it.
Yeah.
And only later did I find that even the audiobook version was available in the library app, but it was back ordered. And for some reason, the search that I did only showed available books.
Mm, okay.
Or maybe it just became available. I'm
right.
Not sure.
Yeah.
So
that's possible.
And you put a hold on it on the library app.
I put a hold on it and I'm now on in the queue on position 14. So another few weeks of waiting time before I get to
that's
this
for the ebook, not the
for
audiobook.
The ebook, yes.
Ebook. Yeah. I was going to say, if you're on the audiobook, you can just sign into my Audible and listen to it. Yeah. So anyway, this is by Jacqueline Hartman, even though I think 50% of the time I said the name during the podcast, I said Hartman.
Yeah.
Anyway, this was recommended by Ryan over on the goodreads.com SFBRP listener group.
Yeah.
There's a thread called Books I Would Like to See Reviewed. And he said, I really enjoyed I Who Have Never Known Men. And he recommended that in January 30th. Anyway, once we finished up that book, while I was reading it, Ryan also said, I think Amatka by Karen Tidbeck and Vita Nostra by Mirny and Serena Dyachenko would both result in good podcast episodes.
Okay.
So I have actually started reading Vita Nostra before, and that's what Ziven said in reply to that. He says, I gave Vita Nostra 5 stars, but I vaguely remember Luke saying that he tried it and didn't connect with it.
Mm.
The beginning is creepy and does seem like it's going to turn into paedophilia. It continues to be creepy, but doesn't become paedophilia. So anyway, if
okay.
I'm reading a book and I'm like, I'm not sure if this is going to be paedophilia or not, like, you've got to give me those signs that it's not way earlier than that book did. Anyway.
Okay.
But he also said, I second that in talking about Amatka. He says it is 1984-esque and Luke has interesting ideas about it and recently reviewed Julia.
Yes.
So I didn't actually recently review 1984, but it is a book I know well enough that if I'm reading a book which is 1984-esque, I'll be able to remember anything that's important about 1984 to tease out the connections.
Yeah.
So that's Ziven's opinion of it. However, Ryan said, admittedly, I only gave Amatka 3 stars, but please don't let that put you off.
Mm.
Okay. And he didn't say he's recommending the book. I think it's a fantastic book and it's really, really good and I really recommend it. He actually says this. It would result in a good podcast episode, you know.
That can go any direction.
It could go any direction. So I finished the book. I do have thoughts.
Okay.
And I'm not saying this will be a good podcast episode.
Right.
But when I was then looking through other people, like I looked at other people's reviews, there's quite a few people saying this book is... lots of people are saying it's very good.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are saying it's good, but also it's almost better to read it to then have conversations about it.
Right. Okay.
And there's, again, it wasn't just me who was thinking that or Ryan who was saying, oh, it's probably the discussion about the book might be better than the book, but that did come up in multiple reviews
okay.
that I read.
Interesting.
Although, again, I made some of these notes and I thought about this on Friday and now it's Sunday. So I can't remember exactly who said that here.
This book is called Amatka.
Amatka.
Who's the author again?
Karen Tidbeck. And they
Karen
are
Tidbeck.
A Swedish author.
Right. Okay.
So yes, anyway, I can't see just of this quick look here, like who was it who said that it's a book which is better for discussion than reading.
And so one of the things that you always base your the rating that Goodreads is giving, and like, yeah, this one has a Goodreads average rating of 3.79.
Yes,
good?
And what is it we say? Like if it's 3.5, it's like generally considered that the consensus is that it's a one-star book, and if it's 4.5, it's a five-star book. So
right.
But here's the thing. I reckon this is one of the books which, if you just look at the graph as we see of the community reviews here, it's a... Oh, where are they? Is there going to be a graph here? Oh, I guess I scrolled all the way to the bottom of the page. Let me find that wherever that graph is. No, I can't see it. Where's the... There should be just something here. Ah, here it is. Community reviews. You see how there's lots and lots of four stars. So
yes,
it's like 50... It's almost... No, it's 43% four-star ratings.
Yeah.
But very few five-star ratings. Very few one- and two-star ratings.
Yeah.
But then a lot of three- and four-star ratings. So a lot of people are getting a lot out of it, but not enjoying it enough to be like five-star, you know?
Because
you can tell by like the shape of the graph of kind of what the consensus is. So in this case, that it's not like overall, it's not like a one-star book or anything, but it's for people who are thinking about it and then dissatisfied in some way. So they're like, nah, like if this was better, it would be five stars, but it gave me enough to... This is how I feel like people are reviewing it. It gave me enough to think about that I'm going to give it three or four stars.
But it didn't touch me emotionally or whatever. Maybe. I don't know. I haven't
read
it.
Well, let's get into this book. I made a note of just somebody's review here.
Okay.
It's by someone called Bradley. And he says, I think it's mild, new, strange, as in like the genre, strange, weird literature.
Yeah.
Or perhaps it's hardcore magical realism. Perhaps it's just a study in what it means to use imagination when surrounded by literalism. Maybe it's a whole society built on the necessity of crushing that imagination in all ways. Maybe it's a necessity. And maybe we're in a bizarro commune land brushing its fingertips against 1984. Again, 1984 comes up a lot in this book. So it's kind of difficult for me to talk about this book because I didn't think it was a very good novel. Karin Tidbeck is Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
I just actually looked up on the Wikipedia. Tidbeck uses the personal pronouns they, them. So I'll just use that. But again, I didn't know that up until literally 5 minutes ago when I looked up their Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
So they wrote this book in Swedish and then they themselves translated it into English.
Okay.
So it's a book in translation, but translated by the author, as far as I can tell. But I looked up the translation copyright was Karin Tidbeck, and then they've translated other things. So the story Augusta Prima, originally written in Swedish, was translated into English by Tidbeck.
Right.
Is this a novel that's been translated? Well, there is a Swedish version and there is an English version. But it's one of those things.
Author.
But if the author does the translation, is it the same book or is it a translation of the Swedish by the author or is it the English version of the novel? So again, it's one of those things I'm like, is it translation or is it just a different edition by the same author
who
then did a version in a different language?
Yes, that is actually quite an interesting question.
I've never thought of that before.
I think the only way one could really have an opinion about it if that you actually would be fluent also in Swedish and then read the English and then see if it is mostly just a translation.
No, but you would have to have
it would be...
You'd have to have a comparison. That's what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, the Swedish version.
No, you would have to have a version that's been translated from Swedish into English, not by the author.
Oh, yes.
You
yes.
understand? Like,
yeah, yeah.
There's no control mechanism.
No.
You don't know if it's... But that's what I'm saying. The previous book, I Who Have Never Known Men,
yeah,
it was translated into English by some legendary French to English translator who's done some very famous works.
Yeah.
And I was like really impressed by the writing. Again, how much is that about the shape of the story and paragraph by... Like, there's the same number of sentences... Probably the same number of paragraphs, but like the use of the language.
Yeah.
How much is it? But in this case, it's it's someone using English as a second language.
Yeah. And it's always the question: how much do you translate word by word, or how much do you translate the literary meaning?
But
or like,
here's the thing: you're the original author.
Yeah.
So when you decide what words to use,
You can just decide that.
You can just decide. Like, you're just like, oh, no, that is what I meant. It's like, but that's not the literal translation. Like, yeah, but I knew what I meant when I wrote. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what I'm saying. Is it a translation or is it an English version of a... So, again, I can't answer that question. I don't know enough about translation to know if the original author does their own translation. Is it a translation or is it just a version in a different language?
That's interesting.
I've got the wrong book up here. Here we go. I went into this not knowing anything except that it might be a bit weird or whatever Ryan said here. He didn't say anything. It has interesting ideas. So all I knew that was 1984-esque and had interesting ideas. And it is, like Bradley said in his review, that it is like fantasy or weird. There's weird stuff going on there.
Yeah.
And by weird, I mean like gribbly stuff and like weirdly magical and the rules don't quite work and reality isn't quite... You know, we watched the movie... I can't remember what it was called. That's a really bad idea for me to then just say it. We watched the movie and then completely blank on it.
Yeah, not even giving me slightly anything about the movie.
Why is it not doing this? Here, Control F. Jeff Vandermeer. Oh, Authority Acceptance, the Southern Reach trilogy. And the first one was called Annihilation.
Yes.
There was a movie, Annihilation.
Yes.
That is like a classic weird thing. So there's something going on, you're not quite sure, and some things are alive and some things aren't alive. And the things, you know, that's what I'm saying by weird, the new weird. So this is definitely weird fiction.
Right. And when did it come out?
This book, the originally in 2012,
right.
The English version, 2017.
Okay, good. So I have a time frame.
Yeah. So... 2012 when it was written. But so imagine a kind of like, again, a commune, which is like 1984-esque, so sort of like very strict rules.
Yeah.
So it's a dystopia, but it's not a science fiction dystopia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even a fantasy dystopia, but it is kind of fantasy because, again, it's like some things feel magical.
Right.
But then you're like, is it magic or is it science fiction?
Do the people feel like it's magic and just don't know that it's science fiction?
They feel like it's science fiction. They're like following rules.
Right.
But enough weird stuff is happening. And that's why I say it's definitely weird rather than fantasy or science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But if there was a movie made about this, it would definitely be a science fiction movie, like Annihilation was. You have to have like some science fiction core of it because there isn't, like in movies, there isn't like weird isn't a genre as it is in short fiction and in novels. But you can also call it, well, is it fantasy? Well, it's like it would be fantasy because there's magic, but in the past, they were definitely in a science fiction world because they're in a current world because the way that they're talking about things are like offices and bureaucracies and pens and papers and, you know, the things that you would expect in our modern world definitely existed. So in the past, there wasn't magic, but somehow they went through, it's sort of like they went into a portal or they went through something and they're in a new space and this new place where they are, the rules are all different.
Oh, so it's not on Earth.
It's not on Earth. Very much not on Earth.
Well, that's an important bit of
so very much not on
about
Earth.
This.
Anyway, all of this to say is that the setup is really good.
Yeah.
And everything about the ideas in this book are very good.
Yeah.
And totally worth discussing.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the characters don't hold up under examination.
Okay.
And the story is 6 hours worth of story.
Yeah.
But it's really if this book had been a novella, if this had been 4 hours of audiobook rather than 6.5 hours of audiobook, and it was, 6 hours and 10 minutes. If this had been 4 hours and 10 minutes rather than 6 hours and 10 minutes, and had just set up the situation, got through the questions, got through to the end. I'm not even saying there's answers at the end, but like just gone through the ideas, ticked off all the ideas, and hadn't really tried to make our main characters us care about them or not care about them or like them or not like them and try and go, oh, now there's this relationship and all this other kind of stuff and they like each other or don't they like it and all that stuff. All the kind of like character work and novel work and things that I would want in a story to make it feel like a novel rather than a single idea.
Yeah, so you would have preferred a novella-length observation of the situation and the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's why I opened this other one. I recently just listened to the audiobook of Walking to Aldebaran by Adrian Tchaikovsky. 4 hours audiobook.
Yeah.
And he has calibrated that to exactly the right amount of ideas to fit into a 4 hour audiobook to make it a novella length.
Okay.
Maybe we could do an SFBP short about that, but not yet because I've got some other novellas of his that I've got that I want to listen to.
Okay.
So maybe we can do a quick collection of his works as novellas. But he calibrates it perfectly. So just as you, as the reader, are making realizations, you're like, ah, and then like, a minute or 2 minutes later in the audiobook, he kind of goes, and yes, that is what's happening. Like, I know what you're thinking. This is actually doing, you know, and he moves on and he gets through to the end and all the twists happen and all the reveals happen. And you're like, oh, you had a story which is perfectly calibrated to be 4 hours worth of audiobook or 155 pages or 144 pages, it says here. And that's what the story was worth.
Yeah.
And you didn't feel like padding it out into a 6 hour audiobook or up to 250 pages rather than 150 pages.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what, unfortunately, Karen Tidbeck has done with Amatka. It feels like there is a really, really good, chunky, get your teeth into one idea, like one thing, like one really, really strong idea at the core of this novel. But then there's like an extra 2.5 hours of padding to make it into a novel.
Right.
And suddenly it's about characters. And I'm like, why do I care about, like, what are we doing spending time here? And the character work and the, like, personal story of the main character isn't as strong as the story of the colony and the story of the world and revealing actually what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, because in all these things, I'm like, well, what's going on with the fifth? There was, like, five towns or five colonies and one of them doesn't exist anymore. And it's always like, oh, what happened to the third starship that's going between the stars? What happened to the other base over here? And this is definitely the kind of thing, like, oh, it's mysterious. Why did that colony fail? And we don't talk about it anymore, but or we do call it, but there's conflicting stories, but you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
like getting to the heart of why, you know, why the other city collapsed or something.
Yeah, sometimes you have main characters that serve more to observe the situation around them rather than observe them as characters. That these, you know, that's a different kind of novel writing, and I think sometimes that can be far more interesting if you have than just the characters, though, so we have a view to the world rather than having a third person narrator looking at telling us things. It's easier to observe it through somebody, but then they don't need to become the main focus, right?
And that's the thing. The everything which is about the colony and the ideas and the themes and all this kind of stuff, which I haven't talked on yet because I want to do the spoiler because, like I say, it would make a good SFBRP. There's no way for me to talk about this without doing spoilers.
Okay.
But it's worth talking about. I think it's really fun and I want to share with you.
Okay.
I don't think you should read this book. I don't think you ever will read this book.
Right.
It's not good enough. I don't think it's a good enough novel to even spend 6 hours listening to it or spending money on an ebook.
Right.
Because the idea is strong enough that I think we can just have the discussion about it.
Okay.
So,
but so far, let me just, like, I haven't listened to this, so I don't know. But at the beginning, you said it's not science fiction, and now you're telling me it's not on Earth. There's starship and spaceships and colonies.
I'm saying it's not science fiction. I'm saying it's weird fiction. In other words, the rules are different, but not in a way which is like, and now let's explain how the world works, like you would do with science fiction.
Okay.
And it isn't fantasy because there isn't like, oh, we can use the magic and we can do all of this kind of thing. You know, there's nothing useful about any of this.
Okay.
It's just like weird, stuff's happening. And I can't explain it more without going to the spoiler. And I will explain it to you.
Yes, because now it's just in.
I know, but I want to get understand. To the point where I can just give the spoiler. I can sound the spoiler horn. I can give it a rating, tell people not to bother reading it, sound the spoiler horn, and then say why. I just want to say the reason why people shouldn't read it is because here are my notes about why it isn't. One of the notes is, what happened to colony number 5? You know, sort of like, I know that's going to be one of the main mysteries. But then all of my notes are, I wish I could care for this protagonist, but they are so void of personality and backstory, there's just nothing there to root for. 2 hours to go, and I'm still struggling to care. And then, like, they fuck someone and turn their life upside down over a quick fuck. And I'm like, this isn't going to end well. And then like later on, I'm like, as I thought, moving in with the first person you fuck isn't a good life choice. And then later on, why is everyone so stupid? Just keep your fucking mouth shut. Don't do the thing! !! Read the room. You know, all of the time, the main character is making stupid decisions, bad life choices. And I could never work out why, except that they felt like they were, it felt like young adult fiction where they're like, oh, I believe in this, so I will do it. And I'm like, don't do that. And I'll get onto reasons why. And then they're like, and I met somebody and she liked me and I ended up in bed with them. And then, but we didn't touch each other and it's all like chaste and stuff. But then we did touch each other and we fucked. And then I quit my job and moved into a new place. And I was like, no, it was just a quick fuck, wasn't it? Like, why? Anyway, or I'm just saying, all of the stuff around the personality of the main character and all of that stuff, it's so bad. It's like really, it was really not upsetting. It was like annoying to me that I was having to spend an extra 2 hours spending time with this person.
Okay.
So because of that, this book for me gets about, for my enjoyment of reading it, I'm going to give this book 2.5 stars.
Yeah.
Because actually as a novel, I thought it was very bad. Now I'm going to sound the spoiler horn. After telling people not to bother reading it, I'm going to sound the spoiler horn, and I'm going to do what Ziven and Ryan wanted in the SFBRP listener group, which was, but I only gave it 3 stars, but please don't put that off. It should result in a good episode. Now I want to talk about the fun stuff in the book.
Okay.
Should we do it?
Yeah, go for it.
Spoiler horn.
That's really unpleasant.
I know it's unpleasant, that's the point, because people who aren't paying attention need to know the spoiler horn's going off so they can stop. All right, this book is fantastic. This is like the best book that I've read in a really long time.
What?
Yeah.
Wait.
Didn't you just hear what I was saying about this? It's worth talking about. The idea at the center of this book is really good. Karen Tidbeck.
You just told people not to read this book and then you said it's fantastic.
No, what I'm saying is, as a novel, it's really bad. But the concept of the novel is really good. Like, the idea behind it is so good that if this was with a competent writer, or maybe somebody who was writing in their, or like in their first, if someone doing something in the first language, or who understood how like humans think and relationships work, it might be a fun book. It might be a 5-star book. It could definitely be a 4-star book. But all of the writing part of it is so bad that it doesn't work. But the idea is really good.
Okay, then tell me, what is the good idea? I've not heard any good idea until now.
So the idea is this: everything, and this is why it's coming after the spoiler horn, because the people who do read it, this is where they're going to get their enjoyment. Living in this world, people have gone through from a different dimension or through a portal into a world which isn't our world, and it's like things are breaking down, and there's nothing there to use or anything like that. But so there's this slime stuff which it comes out of the ground or something. I don't know. It's like weird. It's like it doesn't need to make sense. But yeah. If it's then formed into something useful, like into a pencil or a paper or chairs or a bed or shoes or clothes.
So people do that.
Yes.
So
people humans
take
do
the
it,
stuff. And form
it into something, but they do it by giving it a name. And so because it's got a name, right. it has purpose. And because it has purpose, it exists in the world in like this fantasy way, but it's very science fictional about its fantasy. And this is what Bradley said. It's sort of like what happens when something has to be literal. You can't have something not literal. So you always, every day, there's this thing, kids learn it, there's a naming song, and they go around everything in their bedroom and they give it a name. And they're like, keyboard, mouse, glass, microphone stand, microphone, cable that connects it. And all of these things have that written on it, so you can say the name of the thing. And if you don't do that, and if you don't keep up with that, if you don't continuously give something its name,
right?
It turns back into the sludge.
Oh, so it's kind of maintenance. You do daily maintenance.
Yeah, you have to do daily maintenance. And also, it's very important that you don't give it the wrong name, because as soon as you say water glass, oh, I mispronounced glass. If I mispronounce something and say something nonsense as I name it, it also dissolves. So you've got to use the right name. And the example is using lots of pencils. So you go pencil, 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 pencil. And all of those ones which I didn't say the full pencil, they just dissolve, and you're like, oh shit, oh, I need to say the right words, you know.
Okay.
The words go to it. And also then, there can't be any You can't use metaphor when describing anything. Mm. Again, this is revealed as you go through the book.
Yeah.
So it used, like, the different places used to have different names, which are, like, nice names. If, you know, we were just looking at some place names or something. It's like, oh, it's called Burb. You know, it's got, oh, there's some meaning in it. But you can't use a name with any meaning in it, which isn't the thing. Because if there's anything, if there's any mismatch between the meaning of the word and the thing itself, like, you're just looking at this town, which looked a bit like Burridge, but it was Burbridge.
Burbage.
But then, oh, it's because it's got a bridge in it or something like that. So if you think about something which is called something bridge, but it isn't a bridge, it's just named after a bridge, but you're calling it bridge, the name doesn't match up to the thing that it is, and so it dissolves into goo. There's some stuff which doesn't dissolve into goo, but that's only stuff that they brought with them. So it's called, like, the good paper is the stuff which is actually made out of tree rather than goo.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So what this leads to is these colonies existing in a way which everything has to be regimented, because if you don't say all the words and if you don't do the right things, mm-hmm. and if you use poetry...
Yeah.
If you use poetry... Things start turning to goo.
Yes, and that's probably what happened to that colony number 5.
Yes, again. Yes, all of this stuff is what happens to all of this. Yes. All of this stuff happens to everything. Okay. So what you actually have, and this is why it ties back perfectly to 1984, and that it works really well as a dystopia, is because the control that is needed to keep these societies which pass through a portal and can't get back, or maybe they can get back, but it doesn't matter if they can or not, because that's the weird stuff. That's the doesn't really matter. The idea is there's these colonies, and they live in a place where you can't be non-literal. You can't use poetry. You can't do... So it feels very much like 1984.
Okay.
But 1984 exists in that way because it's a totalitarian state which is trying to hang on to power.
Yeah.
This exists in a state because if you mess up, things turn to goo, people die, and society breaks down.
Yes.
And it's this strange thing here... And this is a review that I read of someone who I think was misunderstanding what the book is saying, or my reading. And this is why it's such a good book to discuss. You can discuss it really well. Emily May says, what emerges is an examination of a society of complete social equality, of communal living and strict adherence to rules that benefit the group as a whole, sometimes at the expense of the individual. My takeaway was that when we are all reduced to the same, treated the same as one part of the whole, we become little more than atoms, pliable and interchangeable. I suppose this is a critique of the kind of extreme socialism that cannot end well, I think, maybe. It's not actually easy to tell whether this world is better or worse than the alternatives, which is perhaps the most unsettling thing at all. I think... Emily May, who wrote that review, is half right. Yes, it is an emergence of an examination of a society of complete social equality, of communal living with a strict adherence to the rules. But it's not that the strict adherence to the rules benefits the group as a whole, sometimes at the expense of the individual. It's that adherence to the rules is necessary for the world not turning to goo. And again, I'm not going to give away actually what happens in the book.
Yeah. But also then for the individual, like, it doesn't only benefit the society as a whole. It also benefits the individual.
If you think freely and start talking creatively and do the things that our main character is sort of like, but what about individual freedom? I'm like, individual freedom means you and people around you literally die, starve.
Yeah.
Turn to goo themselves, or again, don't need to go into the details of what happens, because to be honest, it's weird, and I'm not even sure what's happening by the end of this book.
Yeah.
But the whole point is that it isn't about, I suppose this is a critique of the extreme socialism. It isn't that at all.
No.
What it is, it's positing a world where what isn't, it's like with the rules and restrictions and freedom and... what you get in 1984 and other dystopias. But imagine if those rules weren't just imposed on you by a totalitarian government which doesn't want to lose control and is trying to keep society in line and is like, oh, over here we're having Hunger Games to keep the bread and circuses going and all. Just imagine those rules being necessary for society, not just society, but literally your colony not to sink into the sea or not to disappear because somebody named it wrong. And literally everything that's useful around you needs to be kept in line. The words that you're using and the rules that you're following have to be there, or everybody dies.
Yeah. It's actually, to be fair, I think the opposite, because it's in everybody's interest. Mm. Because if somebody thinks that they want to be, and I'm now using scare quotes, free.
Yes.
They are causing, because of egoistic, like, they act for themselves and not thinking of everybody, including themselves.
Yeah.
So they're acting against everybody and themselves. And there's nothing about freedom that supports that. That is not freedom.
No, it is. The thing is, there is no freedom in this book, but there is no space for freedom. If you want humanity to keep existing, if you want humans to keep living, it is unfortunately one of those things where everybody has to be brought down to that level. Mm. Because if you mess up, or if anybody goes off, oh, we'll go off and do our own thing. It's like, no, you're literally endangering everyone.
Yeah.
And because it's weird and fantasy and the rules don't have to make sense, it's not like, well, you know, in 1984, people can have opposing opinions. Mm. In this, you can't have opposing opinions, or you can, but you shouldn't say them out loud. And for fuck's sake, don't write them down. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And so this is so clever of the book that it is playing with like 1984 style dystopia.
Yeah.
But unfortunately,
on a different level.
No, like at a deeper level.
Yeah.
Like, instead of it being like, this is how it could work in our world, how about imagine a world where the only way for humanity to keep existing where it is, in a healthy way, or in a, you know, whatever way, where people can live and have families or whatever. Think of that, but then create the rules of the world to mean that that has to happen. Which then means our main character is so stupid, is making such bad decisions. Everything that they do isn't just self-harm, it's harming everyone around them.
Yeah.
And I wanted them to fail in their, you know, unlike, you know, your Winston Smith and your Julia and stuff, where you're like, wow, I hope they win out in the end.
Yeah.
And then it's tragic when they don't win out in the end.
Yeah.
This book flips it round the other way. And again, this is why it's not enjoyable to read. Mm. And I wasn't sure if I was meant to be liking the main character or not.
Mm.
But it makes it so she is standing up for freedom and individuality. And every core of my being was like, don't do it. Keep by the rules.
Yeah.
Go with the group. Don't try to be individualistic. And to give it away, she doesn't do that. She goes, well, I'm going to be the hero. I'm going to find out the truth. Even though everyone's saying, don't try and find out the truth. Don't do the thing. She does. And like, I wouldn't say destroys the world, but like, holy shit, it does not end good. It does not end well for anyone at the end of this book.
Yeah.
So it's like the inverse of 1984
in a way. But why does there need to be a search for a truth?
Because our main character is badly written and stupid.
But like, I'm just trying to find out, like, if it is clear that there's slime and it dissolves if you don't maintain the names and stuff.
Yes.
What is there a secret about it? Or like, what is
okay. Let me go down
the
to
lie.
The deeper. Let me go down to the deeper level of this.
Because if there's a truth, there needs to be a lie somewhere.
No. There doesn't. And this is the thing. I'm going to go down one step deeper, which might be a little bit tricky to keep track of. In 1984.
Mm-hmm.
There's not just rules that people follow.
Yeah.
That they have to do this. And also there's the use of language. They have the newspeak, where everything is double plus good or double not good, or, you know, double plus ungood.
Yeah.
All of that kind of stuff. So it's a kind of thing that they're using it. And there it's sort of like, we're going to use language to affect the humans.
Yeah.
In this, it's the other way around. It's like, doesn't matter what language you use, but it has to be literal.
Mm-hmm.
Like newspeak is very literal and stuff.
Yeah.
But it actually affects the world.
Yeah.
In 1984, Winston Smith works in the Department of Truth. No, not the Ministry of Truth.
Yeah.
And he works in the news and history department.
Mm.
So when news happens and then they want to change history, like, oh, we've always been at war with Eurasia. Oh, no, now we're at war with East Asia.
Yeah.
So what they do is they get every mention of being at war with East Asia out of the archives.
Yes.
rewrite it to say that we've always been at war with Oceania. Yeah. No, they are Oceania. Yeah. Oceania. So we've always been at war with East Asia.
Yeah.
And they destroy everything else. And then they put into the record books. And there's these conversations between Winston Smith and the other people or whatever. And they're like, well, why do we even do this? Like, nobody's reading this. Nobody's believing this. But in the book, it's like, no, it's important that this is the reflection. Now, imagine that the world... how well the world works depends on the stories that you've written about yourself. Okay, so it's you're not just writing history that is untrue. The history that you write is truth in this world.
Yeah, it the becomes world, true.
It's not that it kind of becomes true, but it becomes always has been true. So when they say, oh, these people went off and did that thing, and they're like, oh, actually, that's bad news. We're going to say those people died in a fire. When they write down these people died in a fire, and that's the only thing that's written about it, that thing is the thing that holds sway in this reality rather than the truth of what actually happens.
Okay.
So by writing a different history or a different story of what's happened before, you make your current world adhere to the rules more, better.
Yeah.
So when somebody says, oh, this is what happened, and someone says, that's not what happened, this other thing is what happened. Like when the Ministry of Truth in this book, let's say, in Imatka, the Imatka Ministry of Truth.
Oh, they also have these kind of...
they have a library and an information service. But what I'm saying is, like, imagine, if you know what the Ministry of Truth is, it's telling you what the truth is.
Yeah.
So here you have the Minister of the Truth, and he's saying... that person didn't run away and join an outside colony. Mm-hmm. They died in a fire. This person didn't fall through to these secret tunnels underneath and then come out these secret tunnels. There aren't any secret tunnels down there. There are no secret tunnels under the thing. That person fell down, bumped their head, and we found them, and they wandered around and we found them there. But they don't have any memory of what happened underneath. That's what you do. If they don't have any memory of what happened underneath, and everybody else accepts that the story that there's no tunnels underneath the ground, that there are no tunnels underneath the ground.
Like, do they disappear?
They aren't there. The words that are being used about the story of the colony are the things that matter. Again, it's the inverse of 1984.
Mm.
That in 1984, we all know that we were previously at war with East Asia, and now we're at the war with Asia. Like, sorry, with Eurasia. And that is a form of control over the people. Here, what the people know and believe is control over the reality of the world. It goes in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
So if the Ministry of Truth said these people didn't leave and try and set up a rival colony over there, they all died in a fire, the reality for the people in the first colony is that they can't get over to the other colony because for them it doesn't exist. The reality doesn't of them over being a rival colony over there doesn't exist. It doesn't exist, so they can't leave. So the way that you keep the colony going and everyone safe is by not telling people what the truth is, but by telling them the official story, and the official story becomes the literal truth and the ground rules of the colony.
Okay, and who decides that?
The clever people who are in charge, the members of the committee, the truth committee or whatever it is, the ruling committee. They are actually in charge. And our main character is like, well, I think everyone should say what the truth is. And this person, well, I'm going to spread the news that there are tunnels underneath there. And what happens is our main character destroys the colony, becomes... like, oh, what? And what the ministry does is, if someone is like starting to break the rules, they give them a lobotomy in a way that they can't form languages, like whatever part of the brain where they can form words, they interrupt that. So at the end of the book, that's happened to her. So when she wants to say pencil, she just goes blah blah, and when she wants to talk to people, it just goes blah 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 blah. And you're like, great, she's not a danger anymore because she's never going to say any words that contradict the reality because those people are too dangerous. You know what I mean? There's one file that's kept locked away which actually has the reality and then the real stuff. So what happens at the end of this book, and again, massive spoiler territory, she's like, well, I'm going to burn down the library. And by burning down the library, or someone else burns down the library, and then she starts burning the official records, because she's like, everyone should acknowledge the truth. And by destroying the official records and by destroying the library, these people upset the fabric of reality, like the written rules of what, how the places work, like how the thing is working, like how the whole colony is working and the basis, and everything just falls apart and people just sprouting extra limbs and, you know, all the weird stuff that you're expecting in weird fiction, that all just explodes out in like the last 30 minutes of this audio. And I'm like, holy shit, this is terrible audio. Like, I mean, not all, like, it's awful and terrible. And
but
I'm
it's
like,
supposed to be that.
It's supposed to be this way, because this is a thought experiment of what if 1984 language and what if 1984 truth, but actually.
Yeah, but you know what this really reminds me of?
What?
Is for centuries now, like not centuries, for decades now, scientists have observed how the earth and the atmosphere and the climate and everything works.
Yeah.
And they keep telling the world to, and they keep telling to the people, look, there's something going to happen if we keep going in this direction.
Yeah.
And
but words don't mean anything.
Yes. And then people say, no, that.
Yeah, yeah. But got to put aside all literal real world stuff.
I know.
This only works in a world where the rules are flipped around. The rules are weird. It's fantasy.
But
you know,
but also the concept of the idea that they are the, as you said, they're the clever and smart people who are writing down the thing, the storyline, so that everybody's being kept safe.
Yeah.
And then there are people on the outside of these circles that they I'm sure the main character thought about themselves. They, as you said, they were the hero. They thought, I will get everybody the truth.
But yes,
by
the problem,
doing that...
The problem is the main character isn't as clever as Karen Tidbeck, and it isn't as clever as me. So what we're doing, we're existing in a world where I start understanding the rules and I understand what's going on. Or at least I think I do. And again, this is why I think that this book is a 5-star book, because this central core idea is really, really strong.
Yeah.
But it's hung on somebody who's really, really weak and stupid.
Yeah,
and
but
I don't
wouldn't have that really stupid and weak person...
No, it's bad writing. No, this is what it comes down to.
Okay.
The idea is genius. Mm. The writing isn't good enough to support the core idea.
Mm.
Like, the things that happen in the colony are good, but the only way to do this is to have someone who is new to this colony, because there's like 5 different colonies.
Yeah.
And our main character, who I will just now look up the name of, it doesn't matter, Vanya is a government worker, leaves her home city of Ezray for the austere wintry colony of Atmatka on a research assignment. It takes some adjusting. People act differently in Matka, and citizens are monitored for signs of subversion. So in the different parts of this world, like in these different colonies, it's obviously some are a bit more established than others. And some people can be a bit more free because the magic or something isn't as strong there.
Mm.
But in Amatka, this words affecting reality magic is a lot stronger. So she turns over and what happens is like her shoes dissolve or something in her bag. She's like, I didn't name that. And sort of like, well, in Amatka, this stuff is a lot more important.
Right.
So it feels like that she's come in, she's the outsider and doesn't understand it.
Yes.
But again, it's bad writing for her to stay there because she's sort of like, oh, I've fallen in love with my housemate. And I'm like, you have nothing in common. Neither of you like each... Like, why do you like each... Like, it's just that it felt like, oh, this is like a fling or a fuck.
Mm.
But suddenly they're like, oh, I love you. Am I in love? And by the end of the book, I'm like, what are these two people doing? It's just like the first fuck that she had there. You know, like, what's... Like, I didn't understand. Like, none of her motivations make sense.
Yeah.
And as soon as... If she would be clever enough to have those realizations, she... It would, again, I'm not saying it would be more satisfying, but it would, I didn't like spending time with someone who was so stupid, couldn't read the room, was like juvenile in their relationships and juvenile in their actions and everything. Like, you don't understand? Like the only way that the story actually happened and was revolved around was by spending time with an unpleasant, stupid, ignorant, like supremely selfish person.
Yeah.
And just them being so unlikable felt like it was bad writing rather than an intentionally bad character.
Okay.
Is what
Can
it felt
you always
like.
Differentiate that? Like how do you even know that it wasn't meant to be this way, but you are saying it was badly written?
Because if the writing was as, if the character work and the writing was as good as the idea, it would be a 5-star book.
Right.
I can trust, there's lots of authors who I will trust that if they're giving me an unpleasant or ignorant or stupid character, I would trust that they are doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
And just how boring and tedious Karen Tidbeck made this main character, made it feel like they're not good enough at writing to make a compelling, unlikable, stupid character. If someone is like this, they should be compelling in their search for truth, or compelling in their relationships, or compelling. Like, yeah. They have to make me believe that things are happening because they are not intentional, but like, I can't just feel like everyone's being stupid.
Yeah. Okay.
And the love interest isn't being stupid.
Yeah.
And the love interest is like, you are less important to me. Like, even though I love you, or whatever, you know, even though I like, you know, like you and you're moving in with me and all this kind of stuff, I will report you if you keep doing this.
Yeah.
You know, and the other housemate who fell in a hole, he's sort of like, oh, I'm going to do this. And the love interest, whatever, she's like, okay, stop talking. Don't tell this story. You just, what did the medic say? Oh, the medic say you bumped your head and you're a bit confused. Great. That's what we're doing. And she's like being really clever about this. And at the end, she's the one who grows an extra arm. Her girlfriend gets, lobotomized. Her housemate is also lobotomized and goes into a lake and kills himself. You know, everything bad happens because of a stupid, selfish person.
Yeah.
But not in a way which feels tragic, but in a way that feels just stupid and selfish.
So, but it's also a bit of a stranger in a strange land, as in there's a person coming from the outside not understanding.
Yeah, but just imagine the they're so stupid that they destroy the colony and everyone dies at the end because a stupid person wouldn't follow the rules. And it feels like such a noble goal in science fiction and dystopias that, no, let's believe in the truth, let's go and break out and let's be individualistic. That is such a strong message in all dystopian science fiction, that you should stand up to the rules and you should be individualistic.
You are going against the flow and you are the hero in the end.
And like the truth is the most important. Yeah. And that's what, you know, the conversations in 1984, sort of like, and also in Julia, they're saying, what's so important about the truth? He's like, no, but the truth is really. And then Julia's like, you are always going on about what the real truth is. It doesn't actually matter. And it's true. Yeah. And that one doesn't actually matter what the truth is.
Yes.
The what matters is that you say that you believe the official party line.
Yeah.
So the truth doesn't actually matter.
No.
So like, Julia is cleverer than Winston in that she just goes along with it.
Yeah.
And Winston is shown to be like a tragic figure because he's so into the truth, but in the end he just ends up in room 101 like everybody else who thinks about that.
Yeah. So I think that's always what it comes back to with the truth is like the gold and the thing that everybody should go for. I don't think that is actually true as in real life as well, because you can do so much harm by keeping saying always the truth, and like the truth is like my religion is the truth and stuff. And that can be so harmful.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's always, people say, oh, the cover-up is worse than the crime as well. Because, again, it's that kind of thing that like, oh, if you were just honest about it or not honest about it, you know, that's that kind of thing. Like, oh, being a hypocrite is worse than like being a hypocrite and changing your mind. Like, changing your mind is then worse than being wrong and just sticking with being wrong. Mm. Like, flip-flopping and all this kind of stuff. Like, issues of true, what is true, sticking up for the truth is mixed up a lot with like being a hypocrite, breaking the rules, saying one thing, doing another, if you know what I mean. Like, so I understand. Like, I think, and that's why I think this comes off as that it feels really stupid and juvenile, is that you go through this phase as a teenager where what is the truth is the most important thing, and like, oh, what kind of stuff, and then and what you believe and what's really important, and then later on people are like, oh, I'm just trying to have a happy life and having a good relationship.
Yeah.
And when my kid comes along and says something, I'm like, no, you're shit at drawing, kid. You're like, no, you don't say that.
Yeah.
Like, niceties and untruths are the lubrication of relationships and societies.
Exactly.
Maybe not relationships, like social connections.
But you grow up and at some point you understand that certain truths can cause way more harm than that they do good.
Yeah.
And especially if you go somewhere else and somewhere new and you realize people just act, and in this case have to act differently for reasons that are severe in this case, so severe that it is life-threatening to not adhere to these rules, and people who live there know that. And they, for them, it is not like, oh, we have to follow these rules. It's like a natural thing to do so because...
Yes. And that's why I think it's a bit of a pity. And that's why I think this book ultimately fails as a novel, is that the only way they can do that is through ignorance. And I think it would be a little bit better if there was a moment near the end of the... I'm not saying better. It would be a little bit more satisfying if the main character wasn't completely ignorant.
Yeah.
If they would have just maybe had that bit in 1984 where they sit down and have a conversation about, like, oh, what does it actually mean? And let's read this bit and here. But that never happens. And this is why it's a better book to discuss, because you can bring... I can tease all of this out. Because everything that I've said here... about, like, that the history that's contained in the paper, if you burn the paper, the society literally, like, the walls start collapsing and everything, people start coming back from the dead or whatever like that. Again, I'm just coming up with weird shit.
Yeah.
That's my reading, that if you burn the library and burn the records, society, like, literally the fabric of reality breaks down, because what's recorded is actually influences the world and it is truth.
Yeah,
that's my reading of it, but I think it's an obvious reading of it compared to how much is obvious through this. So I was like, why doesn't somebody just sit our main character down and say, stop using words, even if you think something, the words that come out of your mouth about what you think and say and what you think the truth is the important part. If you do that, if you say other stuff which isn't true or which isn't the official line or what other people don't want to have said about them, if you say things about other people, like at one point this guy is like, he's all ill and he's talking himself into greater illness. He's, because he knows that he might be lobotomized if he doesn't stop talking. And he's talking about being lobotomized.
Right.
And he can feel it start affecting him and he loses weight immediately. It's because he is talking himself into being ill and in the end talks himself into committing suicide, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, don't, it's like the benefits of speaking positively. Oh, speak your truth into the world. What if speaking your truth into the world actually works? You know what I mean? So it felt like there was some, like, something that I think there was a way of I think that, again, this is me doing my own world building. I think there could be a way of, once people get old enough that they're not just doing it by rote, like doing the count, like the naming game, like the naming song.
Yeah.
If they, at some point, the kids are sat down and told, do this naming, this is the reason why. And suddenly it's not a game anymore. It's like, oh shit, if I don't do this, it's important. I think there could have been another step where they say, we have the official story.
Yeah.
Because if we don't have the official story, literally the walls start collapsing.
Yeah.
I think there could have been... Yes. I think if our main character had been told that, she wouldn't have been like, yay, truth and freedom and individuality and striking out on your own.
From my understanding, even if that would have happened...
Yeah.
She would have probably thought that what she was being told was just another lie.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. You know? There is another layer to this, which I haven't gone into. There's like a whole other element, which I don't feel like talking about now, because, again, it would just be me explaining my reading of the book to you.
Okay.
But in the end, it is weird fiction, and you're meant to be reading more into it. Like, there's so much stuff going on with the concept and world building and ideas behind it, and there's a lot to think about there.
Yeah.
I just wish that the character work hadn't been there to kind of get in the way of that.
Okay.
Or the character work had been as... like,
stronger.
Like, well, not stronger, but like it felt a bit annoying that our main character had to be so, like, and stupid and didactic and saying, no, I think this, I think that. And, like, and of course, her saying it out loud is like manifesting it in the world or whatever, but it just wasn't fun. Like, when they stand up and do their 2 minute hate analogue, again, it's not 2 minute hate, I'm just saying, if you read a Matka, you'll know the point in the book. And she's sort of like, no, I'm not going to join in, and just storms out and leaves. And I'm like, no, just join in. Just do, like again, read the room. Read the room.
Yeah.
Even if you don't think it, read the room.
Yeah.
And then, like, a chapter and a half later, she's been lobotomized. And I'm like, yeah, you should have read the room. And then, you know, her everyone she loves is turned into a squid. And I'm like, yeah, you should have read the room.
Yeah.
Anyway, don't do the thing.
But sometimes...
Don't mess with the air supply Artemis colony.
Yeah.
Stop. Don't mess around with the air supply. Don't do it. Don't. Oh, I messed around with the air supply. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I told you not to mess around with the air supply.
Yeah, yeah. But sometimes these bad things have to happen. Like, I think sometimes it's in books, things are written too nice, as in there's some stupid situation that a stupid character got themselves into, and then it is somehow like the author writes it in the way that then, oh, they got out of it because somebody was clever and nice about them and helped them out. But here, I quite like it that there are consequences to stupid behavior. You know, you don't often get that. Do you understand what I'm saying? One book, you know, we had this really stupid detective, and there was this email hanging in there in their mailbox.
If you'd just read your email.
And then they were helped out.
Yeah. It's sort of like, this email, which had been in my inbox for the entire length of the novel, somebody just told me all the answers,
exactly.
You know.
And in this book, in Amatka, what sounds to me quite consequential in the end is that somebody actually pushed through with this stupid person that they thought they were right all the way along. And in the end, they got what they were asking for.
Actually, I finally looked at the blurb of the book, which I hadn't read and hadn't really read now.
Yeah.
Trapped in the repressive colony, Vanya dreams of using language to break free, but her individualism may well threaten the very fabric of reality. I'm like, oh, the whole thing is given away in the blurb. So this isn't just obviously just not just my reading of it and other people's reading of it. But yeah, it's interesting to see that, again, somebody thought, oh, I suppose this is a critique of the kind of extreme socialism that cannot end well. Yes, if you think extreme socialism that cannot end well means that when someone fucks it up completely, everybody dies, if you know what I mean. It's like the sword of Damocles hanging over everyone's head, like, I can't think of what the metaphor would be. But imagine 1984, but if Winston Smith wins, everybody dies.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, so it was all there for a reason. It's like, it wasn't just cruelty for cruelty's sake, which is the point. It is torture for torture's sake. It is cruelty for cruelty's sake in 1984.
Yes.
But imagine that if it wasn't just for its own sake, it was actually, you know, there actually was an enemy of the people who could destroy things, so we have to do a 2-minute hate against him.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but the issue is that because these kind of... and here now I'm trying. I haven't read this, so it's sometimes a bit difficult for me to grasp. But there's this the library people who are coming up with the rules. But if the communication isn't good, down to the normal people,
And
that is what it always comes down to. Yeah. And this is what we saw. And now I'm projecting to reality here now. This is why the pandemic had so many issues, is because of science communication.
Yep.
And science communication is so important, so that the people who come up with the ideas and findings...
It's really difficult.
It is difficult.
So what happens is that the authority people just go, oh, trust us, just follow these rules.
Yes.
And you're like, okay, and that's what happens here. It's like, trust us, just follow these rules. Yeah. And one person is Vanya, dreams of using language to break free, but her individualism may well threaten the fabric of reality.
Yes.
You're like... Oh, it's a real pity that the people who want to use their individualism to break through actually do threaten, you know, the people who are like, oh, freedom, let's do my own thing. It's all like, oh, thanks, you just spread a COVID virus to, you know, 20 more people and three of them died and four of them have got long COVID. Yeah. You're like, how's your individualism working out there? So, again, this isn't a critique of socialism or extreme socialism or making everyone equal.
Yeah.
This is a thought experiment of what happens if that... is so necessary.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's other stuff in this book which is good, but that's the main stuff. And hopefully Ryan and Ziven got a lot out of this podcast because they listen to it and don't mind the spoilers.
Yeah.
Again, this is a 5-star idea.
Yeah.
Turned into tedium by bad writing and character work into a 2.5-star book.
Okay, so there's no 2.5 stars on Goodreads. How are you gonna rate it in the end?
I'll probably bump it up to 3 stars because again, I think there is stuff in here that people can enjoy.
Yeah.
But the reason why I opened this by saying the discussion about it, it's like a book which isn't good, but you'll want to read it so you can discuss it with friends. Which again, quite a few people had that. That is what I think.
Yeah, but then you should read it.
It's a, well, hopefully people have now just listened to my discussion about it and they don't need to read it. Like, you don't need to read this book.
Okay.
I can just tell you, think about what it'd be like if 1984, but instead of it all being pointless and just a kind of control, it actually makes reality work, that people follow these rules, use Newspeak, believe that we've always been at war with Eurasia, East Asia.
And the thing is, what I find so impressive is that... you know, with the what is true and what isn't true, if you literally can see the pencil in front of you dissolve, you can literally see what will happen. It is not like a hidden concept.
There is
like,
no spoon.
It's like so it's not hidden.
Here's the thing. In 1984, just to like bring it home really clearly, in 1984, 2 + 2 = 5 is a huge part of the end of that.
Yes.
He's told that he has to believe 2 + 2 = 5 and not 4. He's really struggling to do it.
Yeah.
In Amatka, it's like, no, you have to believe that this thing, this bit of blob is, I don't know, whatever. I'm saying it's playing in the same space. But if Vanya in Amatka actually believes that this bit of blob is a key, it becomes a key and she can use the key.
And she can see it, right?
She can see it.
She can see that happening. So she can just do the maths in her own brain. What
you believe and say is true.
Yes.
In, you know, in a very, in that case, a very small, in a very small area.
Yeah.
But even that, and then she's like, and we can go and live in harmony with the world or something. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Shoot me. Anyway, let's wrap it up there. 2.5 stars.
3 stars on Goodreads.
Yeah, maybe on Goodreads it'll be listed, I'll tick it in 3 stars. But oh my goodness. Fantastic, like literally the best science fiction book that I've read in a year, and also the worst main character that I hated spending time with, thought was pointless, stupid, and literally dragged down what could have been a 5-star book down to a 2.5-star book. That's how unlikable I found Vanya, our main character, how unbelievable I found her.
Yeah, but
and
it
how
feels
aggravating.
Like it's supposed to be like that.
It does. It made me
for the story to work.
No, because I think it's bad story writing. Like I say, Vanya's story is bad. The world building and the whole system and the thought experiment and the thematic exploration is good. That's the 5-star bit.
Yeah, but that only comes out this strong because there's this big
disparity. No, believe me.
Okay,
a better writer. This could have been a 5-star novel.
Right.
I know. Mm. Again, as I was saying before with Adrian Tchaikovsky, he's got some really good novella-length single thought idea concepts and doesn't feel like he has to pad them out with, you know, literally some of the worst romance I've ever read.
Okay.
You know, with some of the worst, most aggravating, annoying characters, but not aggravating as in they're written to be aggravating, but like just what feels like badly written.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And there's a difference between it feels like an author doesn't know how to write characters than someone who is intentionally writing someone who is stupid or aggravating or whatever.
Yeah.
Again, and there's that compellingness that's there, or compulsion which is left behind.
And I think there it could be coming back to what you said at the beginning about the translation or the English version. I think if you're coming from a certain language background,
there is no amount of translation that you could do to fix this.
No,
because again, the root of the character isn't there.
Okay.
Like the root of the relationship isn't there. Mm. The reasons why our main character does what she does isn't there.
Mm.
Like, you don't give up your life and move to a wintry place because you happen to fuck someone once. And if you do, there has to be backstory to tell me what. Because she just turns up and she's like, there's like 5 or 6 lines that tell us about Vanya in a previous life. We don't know why she ends up in bed with people and wants to fuck her roommate. We don't know why, but after doing that, she wants to give up her job, quit her, resign her old job and like start up a new life in somewhere, which is obviously like, why would someone choose to move to 1984 land? Like, why would you go and choose to be in that situation when where you come from is much better?
To bring the truth.
No, but at that point it isn't there. And it's sort of like, it's much more relationship based. And that's what it even says here in the book, in the blurb. Intending to stay just a short while, Vanya finds herself falling in love with her housemate, Nina, and decides to stick around. What is written there is about what we get in the book. Oh, she's fallen in love with her roommate and has decided to stick around. I'm like, why? When? How? What's going? Like, it's just... That bit is just badly written.
Yeah. Okay, I
like,
get it.
If what's put there is as much as I got from the book itself, it's just not good enough. Anyway, 2.5 stars. Let's wrap it up there.
Okay.
The next book.
That's good. Yeah, next book.
Well, I added this to my to-read list here. Where's my page? I had a book. I had something on my to-read list. Maybe it's on here. Oh, Upgrade. That's it. Upgrade by Blake Crouch. Upgrade by Blake Crouch.
Okay.
Started listening to it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm like an hour into it. 10-hour audiobook. Mm-hmm. And I'm about an hour into it. And I'm like, wait. I thought it was because other people have been reading it recently and it's been coming through the, you know, other people, you know, when you scroll down
through,
here
yeah.
and it comes through and lots of SFBRP listener people are giving it 5 stars and say, oh, Blake Crouch is really good as a genre thing.
Yeah.
So it says here, Kemper rated it 3, Bernard 4, you know, lots of people like Timothy 5, quite a few people gave it 5 stars. You know, that was intense. So well written and thought provoking. Thank you very much, Dustin. Lots of people are giving it, you know, high ratings.
Yeah.
I start reading it and I was like, this isn't very good like this. And then, so I was like, I've read something by Blake Crouch before. And so just before I was listening to the podcast where we were talking about it, and I was like the, so one idea about it was really good. And I was then mostly complaining that it wasn't written well enough.
So you've read this book before?
Not that red book. Another book by Blake Crouch. And I gave it 2.5 stars.
Right.
And a few of those were just for like a few good ideas like this. Like there's some good ideas in there, yeah. but the writing isn't good enough and the pacing's all off and the characters aren't very good.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff skipped
and
over.
And that repeats here as
and
well.
And I was like, oh, it's this. It's just this again. And I was like, so I'm not going to finish reading. I got an hour into the audiobook and yeah. I'm glad that I went back and listened to my previous opinion of a previous Blake Crouch book.
Right.
To warn past me has now warned current me and future me not to bother with another Blake Crouch book because just the writing isn't very good.
You know what? I kind of, when you told me that you're reading a Blake Crouch book, I had this niggling feeling in the back of my head. Like,
you should have told me. It was because it was in the library app and I just added it because it was free and it's available now. I was like, oh, great.
Yeah.
And I got that
Monk
and Robot book and you told me, just don't read the next Monk and Robot novella. And I was like, okay, I'll trust you and didn't read it. Yeah. If you had just told me that, just go back and look at the rating that you gave the previous book by this guy. Yeah. But again, I'll always give an author a second chance. If they give a book and it's 2.5 stars, I'll give him a second chance. In this case, I'm giving him 1 hour. So anyway, sorry about that, Blake Crouch. You're just not very good at you're not good enough at writing sentences to make me want to spend 10 hours in your listening to your writing.
All right.
Also, so, I think the audiobook narrator wasn't good enough.
What is the next book then?
I don't know. I think I'm going to go for the there's one more Adrian Tchaikovsky novella.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, two more that I'm going to do. And one of those is available now in the Audible free library. So I'm going to check out.
Sounds good.
I'm going to check out the something something by something something something. Well, I could just. It's right here. I've got my phone right here.
Yeah, just
the next
look up.
Novella I'm going to read is The Expert System's Brother by Adrian Tchaikovsky. And it's only 4 hours. I'm walking to Aldebaran. So maybe I'll do an SFBRP short about some of these things as well.
Sounds
just to talk
good.
About that. And the other book that I have in the library app is, come on, back. Library. Oh, I have The Robots of Dawn, which is Robots number 3 by Isaac Asimov.
Okay.
So that's another thing.
Yeah.
But I think what I'm going to do is return that to the, because that's from the library. I'm going to return that and I'm going to wait around and read that some other time.
Okay. Well, that's generally always available.
So in other words, I don't know what the next episode is going to be, but it's not going to be Upgrade by Blake Crouch.
It's going to be a surprise.
It might be something by Adrian Tchaikovsky.
All right.
So thank you very much to Karen Tidbeck for a very good, fun discussion.
Yeah.
I had a lot of time talking about this stuff. Learn to write some better characters and I'll give your next book 5 stars. It does happen.
Right. Cool.
I think Karen Tidbeck has. They have enough. They have. This book tells me that they have a strong enough idea that I want to read other ideas by them.
Okay. And this was the first novel and other novel has been
I want
been
to
there
read
yet.
Their idea. So in other words, give me a novella or a short story
give me more ideas.
Rather than a novel.
Yeah.
And because sometimes an idea is worth 4 hours of audiobook, not 10 hours of audiobook or 6 hours. All right, that's it from me. Let's just leave it there. Thanks a lot for listening and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.